You're traveling through another podcast. A podcast not only of reviewing and discussing, but of discovery. A journey into a wondrous show whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the RSS feed up ahead. Your next stop, Anthology.
Hey guys, a quick note before I get started on this episode. There was some slight technical difficulties. Well, basically the gain on my recorder was way too high, without me knowing. I don't know how it happened. But anyway, so the sound is a little bit distorted in this episode, and I apologize for that. Hopefully it's not too distracting, but just thought I would give you guys a heads up before we get into the episode. And also the review that we do, the non-spoiler review, does veer off into a little bit of spoiler territory. We kind of talk a little bit about the last scene of the movie. I think it's a little vague that it can be kind of okay, but I'll put another spoiler warning before the review just to as a heads up. So I hope you guys enjoyed the episode despite those kind of drawbacks. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. I'm your host, Matt Hurt, and if this is your first time listening, Anthology is a podcast where I review The Twilight Zone as a first-time viewer and other classic and contemporary science fiction anthology series. For archives of all of my episodes, visit AnthologyPod.com, and while you're at it, like the Facebook page at Facebook.com/AnthologyPod, and follow me on Twitter at OVAnthologyPod. If you want to contact me, feel free to send me an email at Matt@ObsessiveViewer.com. Finally, if you'd like to support what I do here, you can become a patron at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. If you pledge $1 on Patreon, you will get access to a backlog of tons of exclusive pre-show episodes recorded specifically for Patreon supporters spread across all three of my podcasts. Today on the podcast, I am joined by my friend and podcasting partner, Anthony, quote-unquote, Tiny Ramian, for a special between seasons episode of Anthology in which we will be discussing the 1964 political thriller 7 Days in May, which was adapted by Rod Serling from a novel of the same name by Fletcher Nebel and Charles W. Bailey II. So without further ado, let me introduce Tiny. Hi, Tiny.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, good, man.
Good, good. You are back. This is your third or fourth appearance on Anthology?
At least third.
Yeah. Yeah. How does it feel?
I think it's more than that. It might be fourth.
Maybe.
I know we did an episode of Black Mirror.
Did we?
That was for, wasn't that for this? Or was that for Obsessive Viewer?
That may have been for Obsessive Viewer.
Oh, shit.
But
I know we reviewed, I don't remember what it's called, but I think it was Science Fiction Theater, and it was about that the guy who was at Pearl Harbor.
It was The Time Element.
The Time Element.
And it wasn't Science Fiction Theater. It was for Westinghouse Desilu Playhouse.
That's right.
Yeah, it was it was the kind of unofficial pilot of The Twilight Zone.
So, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I went, we talked about The Twilight Zone season one on the CBS All Access show.
That's right, yep.
And that was a good one. I was re-listening to that recently, and like we talked for like 2 hours.
We did.
One of the reasons why I'm bringing you on now for this episode, it's unique because this episode is not a traditional episode of the show by any stretch. Mm-hmm. But I kind of wanted the kind of symmetry I wanted it to be kind of apt thing to have you on because you were on at the end of season one. Of the show to talk about The Time Element, like you mentioned. And I don't know, right now in the show, I am finished with season two of the original series. And I kind of wanted that symmetry of having like kind of the breakdown of, I finished a season of the show. So I had my friend Brandon from Submitted for Your Approval on to kind of talk about the season as a whole. And then similar to how I had you on for The Time Element, I wanted to bring you back on to talk about something related to The Twilight Zone in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like this idea of having a one-off episode at the end of each season where like I would have you come on and we would talk about something that Serling made that wasn't The Twilight Zone.
Okay.
So that's why I selected 7 Days in May because I was very excited to see it. And, and it seemed like something that you would be into. And
totes.
Spoiler, we were both into it. So,
definitely.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that. But I do want to kind of, before we get into the actual review and everything, I wanted to touch base with you about the new season of the CBS All Access show. You watched the first episode a night or two ago?
I did.
Okay. How'd you feel about it?
It felt really good.
Nice.
Actually, I don't know if I can make the statement that I liked it better than almost every episode from season one,
mm-hmm.
but it would have been like a top, it's like a top three of the new series.
If nice.
Yeah, it was really great. I love Jimmy Simpson anyways,
mm-hmm.
But then just him really doing the lion's share of all the acting, really, it just made me, like, him being the focal point of an episode of television.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of that, because he's such, like, a supporting character
right.
actor, you know? Like, you never really see him star in anything.
Yeah.
So to see him be, like, the main guy, I really mm-hmm. I really dug that. I know he was in an episode of Black Mirror.
Yes, yes, he was.
Oh. He was great in that. But again, he was like, great. He's like a supporting
yeah. Oh,
character.
Yeah.
He's been on so many things. But mm-hmm. But yeah, so it was cool just to see him in that. And
nice.
Not to get into the episode, but like I think my favorite mm-hmm. thing about it was the amazing chemistry that he and Gillian Jacobs had.
Yes.
Just with their voices.
Yeah,
that was like really amazing. And just the visual acting from mm-hmm. Jimmy Simpson. Really great. It's nice. A well-crafted episode. Really good writing, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Loved it. I kind of saw it coming in a
oh,
way.
Oh, really?
It didn't spoil... Like, it didn't make it any less awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, I reviewed it, so you can check out the review and everything.
I will.
Hint, hint. I'm actually really proud of that review. I kind of... Because when I review the new series, and by extension, like, recently when I've done the original series, like, I have... really tried to just dive as deep as I can into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a ton of work.
Yeah.
But I'm really proud of the thing of the finished product. Cause like, I don't know. It's fun to be able to just dissect it the way that I do. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm curious to, if you have any like thoughts when you listen to the review, if there's anything that you disagree with or picked up on or
okay.
That I picked up on or anything.
I'll listen to it tomorrow. I gotta nice. Drive tomorrow. So.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. So, I kind of forgot this. Let's introduce you. So
yeah,
Tiny, you've been on the show before, so mm-hmm. we don't need to really dispense with all of the, regular stuff, but why don't you just mention your two podcasts that I don't have any vested interest in?
So the two podcasts that I'm on are yes. The Obsessive Viewer,
mm-hmm.
where we talk about movies and TV shows, mostly like kind of review stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We do some topic stuff every once in a while, mm-hmm. but that's kind of how it started. But we've really mostly gotten into reviews and sort of just
yeah.
talking about stuff that we like and. We do a segment called Potpourri,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes we'll do a whole episode of Potpourri where we talk about stuff we've been watching or stuff we're looking forward to. So that's a really fun movie and TV podcast we do. And then,
nice.
Was it 4 years ago? 3 years ago we started Tower Junkies?
3 years ago. 3 years ago.
Three yep. years ago.
3 years ago in like a couple of weeks.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
We started Tower Junkies, which is our Stephen King podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat focused on the Dark Tower series.
Occasional focus
yeah. on. I'm actually really happy that kind of morphed into a general Stephen King.
Me too.
Podcast. I think
yeah.
that makes sense, and I don't think there's anything wrong with the title.
No,
calling it Tower Junkies or whatever. So.
Yeah,
but yeah, we man, that's been a really fun podcast. We've been doing, I think the last like 6 or 7 episodes we've done, it's been Tower Junkies.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And I love it. We're both huge Stephen King fans.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about the books. We talk about the TV shows that have been adapted from his books and the movies. And there's just so much content from that man's brain. We had to start a podcast cause we're such big fans. And
it's insane.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun over the last several months. We've been
nice.
Doing Tower Junkies episodes left and right. So
yeah, well, that sounds amazing, Tiny.
Yeah.
no, it's funny because like we just finished. If you guys are interested in checking out Tower Junkies, of course you know where to find it. But we just finished our season 2 review series on Castle Rock,
mm-hmm.
and since I'm insane, I've made a master list of all the potential episodes that we can do for Tower Junkies on the website, and it's just like I get so much satisfaction out of being able to like look at that and look at that master list and see that we've covered all iterations of like The Shining, and to see that we've finished our review series on Castle Rock, and it's just really, it's really satisfying. Like, that's, I don't know, it's a lot of fun. I'm really glad that we're doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So Anthology, are you a fan of the show?
Yeah. Okay, cool. I haven't listened to a lot of it because I, like you, have never watched The Twilight Zone.
Right. And yeah. That was going to be one of my next questions, but yeah.
Yeah. I have not been a good fan about watching the show, and like, I don't want to listen to your review if I haven't seen the episode.
Right.
So it's something I got to get on. And, you know, The Twilight Zone's a big blind spot for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I am obviously two seasons into The Twilight Zone, the original series, and I've devoted a very large chunk of my life to it. Even if you don't listen to the show, I recommend watching it. Just watch it as much as you can, because it's so freaking good.
Everything I've seen, I really liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I recommended that you watch The Obsolete Man. Did you ever end up watching that?
I have not watched that yet.
Okay. Okay. It's really good. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, cool. So... yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, how much of The Twilight Zone have you watched since your last appearance on the podcast, if any?
Well, I don't think I've watched any.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know. I'm a terrible fan. Yeah, I don't know why. I don't have an excuse, really. I just haven't watched it.
Nice. Do you think, is this conversation going to push you toward picking it back up, or is it something that you'll just get to when you get to?
It really should, because I just love that Netflix, you can like download episodes and just have them on your phone. And I've been watching a lot of stuff on my phone lately. So I should start doing that, just throwing a few episodes on my phone and you know, just having them there. And when I think about, oh, I need to watch that, and I'll just watch it. And
nice.
That's what I should do.
I definitely recommend it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially because, like, I mean, it's like 25-minute episodes at most, and just they pack, there's so much packed into it. And, like, to get to kind of not to jump ahead too much, because I have other stuff I want to mention. If you liked the dialogue and the writing of 7 Days in May, like, there's a scene, we'll talk about it, but there's a scene where I was just like, this, like, Rod Serling is just brilliant. Like, I don't know how much of it was from the book, but the way that he handles just people talking and interacting with each other, it's this weird meld of taking what could be a pretty dry but still dramatic situation and creating tension just through dialogue and interaction. And some of that is on John Frankenheimer, his directing and the performers, but also just giving the information in such an approachable, like, straightforward way it's a political thriller. And I did not feel bogged down by any kind of too inside thing or too much information about, you know, the details of it. It's just very straightforward and everything. So anyway, if you liked that writing style and the dialogue and everything, I highly recommend The Twilight Zone, because he wrote like 90-some% of the episodes.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So you did that. So we didn't talk about this on the Patreon thing, but I wanted to mention it kind of up front on this episode, because the Apple TV Plus, I think, adaptation of Foundation.
Yes.
They released a teaser trailer. And so Foundation is a book series by Isaac Asimov that you and I have read the first one.
Right.
I haven't read any more, and I don't believe you have either.
I have not.
But we talked about it on Patreon at one point, and yeah, well, then kind of by happenstance, they released this teaser. What did you think of the teaser, and are you excited for Foundation?
I am really excited for it. I wish it wasn't on Apple TV.
Yeah.
Just because I don't have that subscription.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And having read the book, I think when we briefly talked about it, one of us mentioned, I don't remember if it was me or if it was you, but one of us mentioned that I think it would be extremely difficult to adapt for TV or movie.
Yeah.
And so just because of that, I'm really excited to see just if they pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just the constraints of the story make it so difficult to adapt to any other medium than text.
Yeah.
It's just really tough. But, you know, the teaser, I've only watched it once, and I watched it on my phone,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't paying too close attention because it wasn't a good environment to be watching it, and I was like, sure. I really just shouldn't watch this. That looks really cool, though. Oh, but man, I'm just going to turn it, look at that part. And like, I should have just shut it off and like waited till I got home and watched it somewhere else, but I didn't. So, yeah, I should have done that, but I don't really remember too much of it. I just remember liking the visuals and some of the casting, Lee Pace.
Lee Pace and Jared Harris is in it also. I'm really intrigued by it. Just like I wasn't too hot on the book, on the first book, but like I said in our Patreon recording a while back, it feels like the type of story that I will grow more into the further I get in the series. That's my hope, because the first one is kind of just scattered and there's a lot of information that's kind of dry and everything. So, so we'll see. But the visuals of it look really cool for the adaptation. So,
absolutely.
It doesn't have a release date or anything, but it's expected to be out next year. So we have time, but it'll be interesting.
Are you going to have any way to watch that? Like, you have to watch it on your computer, basically?
Probably. I'll figure something out. Yeah. I don't know. Hopefully, maybe. Yeah. I don't plan on that, or I don't anticipate this, but I think that maybe at some point I would hope that they do like a standalone thing, because I would be more than happy to get a subscription.
Yeah.
If they had like a standalone app that you didn't need Apple TV or anything.
Right.
Like, I just think that that's kind of silly.
That is. I didn't even realize that until you told me about that. You have to have, for those who don't know, you have to have an Apple device to watch Apple TV content.
Yep.
Which sucks.
Yep.
Which I have an iPhone, but that's all I have. I have a laptop, but I haven't turned it on in years.
Right. You haven't had it at your house in like a year or more. Because I have it.
Right.
But yeah.
We used to have an Apple TV, but we just never used it. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Really kicking yourself now, aren't you?
A little bit.
Yeah, but like that's the thing. So like Apple TV Plus has like some things. Like Ben on Obsessive Viewer has talked about it. And like he's not too hot on it or anything, but like there's some stuff that I want to check out. Like, there's like a mini series or something from M. Night Shyamalan, I think, producing it.
Yeah.
There's a pretty relevant to this podcast. There is a remake or reboot of Amazing Stories, the 80s. Steven Spielberg anthology show, more fantasy and everything, that I want to check out. And yeah, I would rather spend the 10 or so bucks for a month subscription that I can watch on my PlayStation rather than like, I think it's ridiculous to think like, okay, well, or I can buy a $200 Apple TV or however much it is.
Right.
And not need, it's so dumb. Yeah.
It really is.
Yep. So anyway, we'll see how that goes and we'll see what the world is like in 2021.
I'm surprised Apple hasn't come out with like a streaming stick.
I am too. That's really, yeah.
Because Chromecast and Amazon Fire Sticks are like so fantastic. Like,
right.
We use a Fire Stick. And it just seems like Apple would totally be into that. it's an affordable thing. That's why.
That's why. Like that's what I was gonna say. Like, right. Yeah, if they did, it would be like $100 stick or something.
But I maybe it's just me being optimistic, and I am a fan of Apple.
Mm-hmm.
But not one like the fanboys who. That's not me. But I do like their stuff. But like I would think that maybe they could do one for like $50. You know.
Yeah.
Because a Chromecast is like $25,
something like that. Yeah,
an Apple Fire Stick is, or I'm sorry, an Amazon Fire Stick is, I think, just like the non 4K one is like it's like $25.
See, yeah,
it's so affordable. I would think that they could be highly competitive at $50.
Right.
Which I'd be willing to spend $50.
I would probably be willing to spend that much. Because, like, I have somewhat of an interest in it, in having, like, any, like, access to my Apple stuff. Because, like, I have some movies on iTunes that I bought way back when, or that I redeemed the digital copy of, not thinking that it would wouldn't tie to, like, my Vudu account or anything. Mm-hmm. So, like, I have stuff on iTunes that I could watch and put in the rotation of things that I can watch.
Yeah.
But I just don't have any way to access it without just watching it on my computer.
Right.
So, kind of dumb.
Yeah. They should also just have an app.
Yeah. Yep.
Be cool.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, this is Anthology.
Yeah,
you're fine. We're fine. So, Tiny, let's go into our review of 7 Days in May.
Let's.
And let's delay it just a little bit further and say, so we've covered that you haven't really watched that much Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. You've seen The Time Element because you were on for that,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't remember much of that review or the episode.
Yeah.
But I think you liked it.
Oh, I did like it a lot. Yeah.
Okay. And then you've seen Planet of the Apes, right?
The original, no.
Really?
Actually, I've just seen the James Franco ones. Those are all I've seen. I didn't even see the shitty Mark Wahlberg one. I've never even seen that one. I've never seen any of them. It's never been my thing.
Okay. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Because so in the sphere of Twilight Zone podcasters, there's Tom Elliott, who I've mentioned on the podcast before. He does the Twilight Zone podcast.
Okay.
He's kind of like he's been doing it for a long time. He's very good. Mm-hmm. But he has a point of saying in several episodes, he mentions that he considers Planet of the Apes, which Rod Serling co-wrote or had a writing credit on.
Okay.
He considers that to be like the one true Twilight Zone movie.
Okay.
So that is interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know that. Interesting.
Yeah. I've just never, for no particular reason, I probably like them. I've just never watched them.
Wow. Yeah. It's very good. Nice. So
how many are there that,
oh, there are a ton. It's like maybe if you don't count the revival or the James Franco, or James Franco was just in one of them.
Right, he was.
But I want to say there's like 7?
Maybe? Really?
Or maybe not.
Wow, I thought there was like 4 or 5.
There, it might be. I know like way back when in like 2014, I did a review series of all of them.
Okay.
On the website. But yeah, it's interesting because like, Planet of the Apes, it's very similar to, a season one episode of The Twilight Zone.
Oh, okay.
I shot an arrow into the air. For the most part.
There's 5.
5. Okay.
Yeah. Planet of the Apes, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, mm-hmm. Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, and Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Right. Hmm. Yes. Yeah, so anyway.
I've seen the most recent trilogy, Rise, okay. Dawn, and War.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the first one, they were really good. I liked those a lot.
Me too.
So, yeah, I didn't realize that Rod Serling wrote them.
Oh yeah. Well, he wrote the first one.
He wrote the first one.
And I think it's like a co-writing credit.
Okay. Gotcha. I didn't realize he'd written that.
Yeah, but it definitely has that Twilight Zone feel to it.
Okay.
Really good. I think you'd really enjoy them. And like some of the sequels are pretty decent if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty cool. So yeah. All right. So yeah, with that out of the way, let's talk about 7 Days in May.
Yes. I'm suggesting, Mr. President, there's a military plot to take over the government. This may occur sometime this coming Sunday.
There are some who will say it can never happen here. But this is the story of how it could happen. In 7 days of intrigue, of blackmail, of terror, an eternity of suspense. This is the astounding story of a military plot to overthrow the government of the United States, which, if successful, would change the fate of every American.
So 7 Days in May is from 1964. The plot summary is United States military leaders plot to overthrow the president because he supports a nuclear disarmament treaty and they fear a Soviet sneak attack. This movie stars Burt Lancaster as General James Mattoon Scott. And I just realized I do have notes for this. Kirk Douglas as Colonel Martin Jiggs Casey. Frederick March as President Jordan Lyman. Ava Gardner as Eleanor Holbrook. And then Edmund O'Brien as Senator Clark. And rounding out the cast is Martin Balsam as Paul Gerard. I meant to make notes and see if anyone else has had appearances on The Twilight Zone, but Martin Balsam is in at least one episode so far that I've seen.
I recognize them.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, he was also in The Time Element as well.
Yes, right.
And he was also obviously in Psycho.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wasn't he in... He was in an episode of The Twilight Zone in season one.
Yep, one of the early ones, like the second or third, or the third or fourth episode, the 16mm Shrine.
That was a great episode.
Yeah, oh yeah. I liked it a lot. Yeah.
He's good.
Yep, and then writer for this movie was, of course, Rod Serling, adapted from a novel by Fletcher Neville and Charles W. Bailey II, and director is John Frankenheimer.
Love John Frankenheimer.
Oh yeah, he's amazing.
Manchurian Candidate, French Connection.
Yep, yep.
Ronan.
Mm-hmm. Man, The Manchurian Candidate's great.
Such a good movie.
Yeah, and apparently this movie, 7 Days in May, is considered part of a quote unquote paranoia thrill or paranoia trilogy.
Oh.
So Frankenheimer did The Manchurian Candidate in 1962, and then 1964 he did 7 Days in May, and then if I'm not mistaken, let me check the year. Then in, I think it's 1966. Let me double check. 1966, he did Seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, which I did a bonus review of, and it is available on CBS All Access, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but I did a bonus review of that on an early episode of Anthology. Yeah, because I think one of the actors was also in an episode of The Twilight Zone.
Okay.
But yeah, anyway. That's like his paranoia trilogy.
Okay,
I should really revisit Seconds. In other words, Tiny, I should go back for Seconds.
Hey, puns.
Yeah, but yeah. So anyway, 7 Days in May is like the middle of that trilogy kind of thing.
Okay.
And I do have some notes about John Frankenheimer as he relates to The Twilight Zone. So if you'll indulge me for a second.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so he never directed an episode of The Twilight Zone, but he did direct several of Serling's scripts for other TV shows. So I have a list here. So he directed one episode of Danger, titled Knife in the Dark, which was written by Rod Serling, and he directed four of Serling's Playhouse 90 episodes. There was Forbidden Area in 1956, The Comedian in 1957, which was my bonus review for episode 30 of the podcast, and Bomber's Moon from 1958, which was a bonus review for episode 34 of the podcast, and the last Playhouse 90 episode that he directed of Serling's was A Town Has Turned to Dust, which, you guessed it, is a bonus review for episode 45 of the podcast. And then he also directed two of Serling's scripts for the show Climax, which were titled, they were both in 1955. They were titled The To Wake at Midnight and Portrait and Celluloid. So that's the information I have for John Frankenheimer.
Wow.
Yeah. And man, his directing is just incredible, especially in this movie. I was really into his direction. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so we are probably going to go the obsessive viewer route and do a non-spoiler and spoiler review for 7 Days in May. So we're going to go ahead and go into non-spoilers. And Tiny, what were your expectations going in? What did you know about this movie before I kind of assigned it to you? And how did you feel in kind of broad terms about it?
I had never heard of the movie before you mentioned it. I didn't really know anything about it going in. I kind of wanted to go in blind just for fun, I guess. I don't know. That's sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's a bad decision, but, it worked out this time. Yes. It kind of got set up, not spoiled, but like kind of, I kind of knew what it was about because, like, I saw the movie poster and it says, the astounding story of an astounding military plot to take over the United States. I was like, oh, well, okay, I kind of know a little bit about it
right
now. But that was fine. I knew so little about it going in, I really didn't have any expectations.
Okay.
I don't think you even told me how it relates to how it relates. And then I looked at it and I was like, oh, well, written by Rod Serling. That's kind of obvious there. so really the only part of your question I can answer is how I felt about it overall.
Yes.
I really, really liked it a lot.
Nice.
I thought it was a great movie. Of course, great writing. I loved the acting, too. I don't think I had ever seen Burt Lancaster in anything.
I can't think of anything that I've seen him in, either.
Yeah, I knew his name, but that was about it. And also, I don't think I'd ever seen Ava Gardner.
Oh, yeah.
I know her name, but it wasn't really familiar with her at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like those three, Kirk Douglas, Burt Lancaster, and Ava Gardner were... all three just absolutely fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
Really, I think the standout was probably Ava Gardner.
Oh, yeah?
Because she's on screen so little. And just her back and forth with... I feel like she kind of outshined Kirk Douglas a little bit.
I could definitely see that,
I couldn't take my eyes off her. She was just fantastic.
The scene in where the kind of big moment with him and her when he's getting when he wants to get the letters, just... whew. That was really powerful, really good stuff.
Really, really good, yeah. I hadn't... And really, Kirk Douglas, I watched Spartacus, and there was this funny old... Well, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was a movie he was in. I say it's funny because I think it's like a Disney movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's good. It's a good movie, but... so he's in that. Like, those are like the only two movies I've ever seen Kirk Douglas in. You know, he's such a prolific actor, and he lived to be like 270 years old.
Right.
He's been in so much. I just haven't really seen him that much, and just didn't really have an opinion on him as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
But this really blossomed my opinion of him. I thought he was great in this.
Oh yeah.
It was good to see him in a leading role.
Mm-hmm.
And his character was so fun because I feel like. He was very non-committal to things. Like he was such a cautious actor, like amongst this plot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he wasn't like playing both sides, but he was just so delicate and just like, yeah, the parts where he's talking like you used the word tension when you were talking about the movie earlier, and that's just the best adjective for this movie. It's so tense.
Yeah.
Because it's really just people talking for 2 hours. There's not really action in this movie. But I think so much of that tension comes from the fact that Jiggs, the character of Jiggs, played by Kirk Douglas, is just walking this tightrope through the whole movie.
Yeah.
Really impressively. That was one of my favorite parts of it. Just overall, a really well-crafted movie on so many fronts. Mm-hmm. Great acting, loved the writing, super good dialogue, and Frankenheimer did some good camera work and some nice directing. I really, really like this movie a lot.
Me too, and it's something that has always been on my radar since starting Anthology, of course. And I think more so than some of Serling's other projects and everything. I've just been very interested in it because Serling had such a strong grasp of how to articulate like the era that he lived in and the threats and the fears and everything. And of course, my gateway into that, or the majority of my knowledge of his style in that fashion, is through the Twilight Zone and through genre and through science fiction and fantasy. And so seeing like a straightforward, dramatic thing in which he wrote out all the beats and everything, granted it's adapted from a book, but I don't know how closely it is to the book or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But just like I said, the way that he is able to just take these kind of, I don't necessarily want to say complex because it's not really that complex in terms of the plot and everything.
Yeah.
But it is somewhat far-fetched or outside what would otherwise be outside the realm of possibility. I don't know. he takes the concept and he boils it down to a point that is very much approachable and believable, and that's complemented very well by the acting as well. Like I said, there's a scene where Kirk Douglas and Martin Balsam and the guy playing President Lyman are in Friedrich March, are in, I think it's the Oval Office, or they're in the White House, and they're talking, and it's where, like, it's where Jiggs is giving the, get, like, he's outlining what's going on. He's telling, he's, like, telling his concerns to the president. And to your point, Tiny, about how Kirk Douglas's character is noncommittal and how his style is just so much, like you said, noncommittal and everything. What I loved about that is that he is putting forth this, he's just sharing this information. And like he even says repeatedly in that scene, he says, I like the president is the president is just like, all right, cut to the chase. Like, right, what's the bottom line?
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, I love that because it's authentic, because it's such an extreme scenario that they find themselves in. And it's something that those characters in that time, in that scenario, would probably not be able to articulate in a way.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so, so good. And like you said, it's just mostly people talking for 2 hours, and the tension is just so good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Really, really loved it.
Yeah. In that scene, and I think they were like somewhere in the West Wing for that scene. What's so cool about it is he's basically just like stating these facts.
Yeah.
And he basically wants the president and his, I guess Martin Balsam was like his chief of staff, I think.
Yeah. Or some kind of aide.
Yeah. He's basically like, can you put this together? He's like giving these facts, and he's like, you should be able to put together what I'm laying out here,
right,
without me coming out and saying it. And that, I just loved the writing, and the craft of that scene was so good.
Yeah.
But another cool thing about the movie is it really felt like very kind of Shakespearean drama to me.
Yeah.
Like Coriolanus or something, or even a little bit, not necessarily Macbeth-ish, because there wasn't any like mysticism or magic or anything like
that.
But just because of the mutiny and the military side of it.
Yeah.
Had that feel to it.
It does have that feel of like the structure of like a tragedy, a Shakespearean tragedy,
right,
to an extent.
Right.
Just really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved about it is that there are like the tension is pretty palpable throughout it. And it, when the release of that tension, like, or the kind of crescendo of each tense encounter and everything, like you said, there's very little action of any kind in this movie. And when there is action, or when there is something that would be a boiling point of the tension that's mounted throughout the movie, it's off screen.
Right.
Like, we find out off screen things that happen, and like the structure of that and the way that is utilized is that puts all of the, that takes what would have otherwise been like a thriller, like a thrilling, like action set piece, or like a shock thing for, in terms of narrative, it flips that since we don't see it. And it just creates this scenario where instead of us being like shocked by something happening, it's more of a, oh, we're sympathetic to the characters who are learning this information after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to, like, it's, we're figuring out like, oh, okay, well, this is the next phase of this plot that's going on. And now, instead of like being reeled by something that would have been like nowadays a big blockbuster kind of set piece, we're kind of just with the characters in learning these facts and reacting to them. And we're anxiously awaiting like the next phase of what they're going to do in order to stop it. It's very, like, it feels so steeped in obviously the Cold War and everything. Like, it's all like possibility and like what could happen with limited intelligence in terms of like what the different pieces are on. Like, instead of being like a, a plot that's unraveling where you see the pieces on the board and you're moving them into position and stuff. It's like it's steeped in this Cold War era where we don't even know what pieces are on the board or where they're positioned, but we need, like, the characters need to position themselves in a way to, you know, prevent something disastrous from happening.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that.
Yeah. It's also, I think one of the cool things about it too is the fact that it's came out in 1964. So this was like, mm-hmm. probably not even a year away from removed from the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there are a lot of theories out there about how, you know, that was a military assassination or that was a right. government assassination, because Kennedy wasn't falling in line or he wasn't mm-hmm. handling the Cold War the way that the military leaders wanted him to, or the CIA wanted him to, whatever. I'm not very well versed in the Kennedy assassination. I know there's all kinds of stuff out there, but it's interesting to see a movie like this, because while it's treasonous and irrational and you know, undemocratic, you know, to basically mutinize or perpetrate a coup against the president, it's I it almost felt kind of cathartic, I guess, because. Mm-hmm. As a nation, I don't want to say we because I wasn't alive, but
right.
as a nation and as a society, we took that assassination really hard.
Yeah.
And that was a really hard thing. And it's almost like Rod Serling was writing this in a way of like, you know, that was a, if you believe that, that was a successful mutiny upon the United States. Someone,
oh, yeah.
even if it was just, the assassin.
Lee Harvey Oswald?
Lee Harvey Oswald. Yeah. I wanted to say John Wilkes Booth.
Oh, God.
That's ridiculous. Even if it was just Lee Harvey Oswald, it's still, in a way, a mutiny on the United States, because that's what he was trying to do, is get him out of power. This is... In this movie, things go differently, and the level-headed, peaceful-thinking leader...
Mm-hmm.
Signs a disarmament treaty. And
yeah.
it's like, you know, Kennedy may have been the person to do that
mm-hmm.
in the 60s, but we never got that chance.
Right.
And that's, I sort of made that connection. I have no idea if the writers of the novel or Rod Serling were thinking about the Kennedy assassination and the country's catharsis or the country's thoughts on that, as a society when they were writing this, but I felt a link there, I guess, mm-hmm. as I was watching it.
I actually have some trivia about that.
Okay.
So, according to trivia, so a couple things. One is that Kirk Douglas had been at a dinner with JFK when JFK asked him if he planned to make the novel 7 Days in May into a movie. And when Kirk Douglas said yes, the president spent the next half hour telling him how great a movie it would be.
Wow.
And then another piece of trivia that I found was... this was originally scheduled to release in December of 1963, but But Burt Lancaster insisted the release date be postponed since it was too soon after the assassination of JFK.
Yeah.
Which same thing kind of happened with Dr. Strangelove.
Uh-huh.
And let me kind of sidetrack us just a little bit and ask you, have you seen the Sidney Lumet movie from 1964, Failsafe?
No.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. It also features Twilight Zone alum Fritz Weaver.
Okay.
Which isn't in this movie. I don't know why I said also, but it does feature that. I have the Blu-ray if you want to borrow it.
Okay.
Highly, highly recommend it.
Okay.
Do you know anything about it?
No, nothing.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Didn't you, I think you told me about it, though. Isn't it kind of like Dr. Strangelove, but not comedy?
It is very much like Dr. Strangelove.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there was like a lawsuit involved too, I think.
Really?
I don't know. Look it up.
Okay.
But yeah, it's, but both are obviously really good.
Nice.
I'm hoping for the website, for obsessiveviewer.com, I have a review of Failsafe that I want to post on November 3rd. Which is the election day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to post 3 reviews that day. I want to post Failsafe, Dr. Strangelove, and The Manchurian Candidate. post those reviews all throughout the day. So like when the polls open, post the Failsafe review and then
nice.
Manchurian Candidate like in the afternoon, and then when the polls close, Dr. Strangelove. I still need to review Manchurian Candidate and Dr. Strangelove, but, God, it's so interesting because 1964, we had Dr. Strangelove, Failsafe, 7 Days in May. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's so interesting to, like, think about going back and just watching that media of the time of the, like, kind of the political climate and everything.
Right.
The
political hive mind, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so you liked Ava Gardner, a lot. How did you feel about her plot and the, her arc throughout the story?
It was really interesting. I also wonder if there's a bit of a Kennedy, John F. Kennedy link there too. Cause I mean, it's basically a fact that he had an affair with,
Marilyn Monroe.
Marilyn Monroe. God, yeah. I am blanking so hard on things tonight. I don't know why, for no reason. But it's also, it was also famously ignored by the media at the time.
Oh, yeah. Because
they were, it's a completely different time back then. They were just kind of like, yeah, that's his business between him and his wife. So,
a completely different time. The media ignoring something that's an unethical that a president's doing?
Right.
Really? Yeah. It's a completely different time.
But I don't know. I feel like back then they felt differently about affairs.
Yeah.
You know, that was, and now it's sex scandals are everything now. Mm-hmm. And they're so politicized or they're so publicized.
Yeah.
It was just a different time.
And, yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, there were these Ava Gardner's character. It's basically implied, not necessarily implied, but almost blatantly said that she had an affair with, Burt Lancaster's character.
Yeah.
And it's really, I really love how it was used in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
When later on, President Lyman wanted to have it as a way to basically assassinate the character of the Burt Lancaster's character. I can't remember his name. General Scott.
General Scott. Yeah.
So he basically had it as a loaded gun, if you will.
Yeah.
To tie it to Hamilton.
Right.
You know, he had that loaded gun ready to go. And I just love the fact that he had every President Lyman had every right to just fire that gun. And as a form of retribution or revenge or, just flat out character assassination against him, but he chose not to. I think speaks volumes to his character, to the character of President Lyman, in the movie. I feel like Frederick March is a little lost as President Lyman. He is a little bit lost in the shuffle in a way as a character. Like he's just so, he feels like such a reactive character throughout so much of the movie.
Yeah.
He's really just kind of barking orders, not barking orders, but just kind of throwing orders, and he's not particularly likable either.
Right.
But then by the end of the movie, he's just so, like that press conference, he's so inspirational, and just, again, I kind of link it back to Kennedy, who was such a great speaker and had all these incredible quotes that we still use today.
Right.
And that press conference at the end of the movie felt like his sort of coming out party or his at least a very, very satisfying comeuppance for the character.
Yeah.
That he overcame such a crazy plot and handled it so well and sort of kind of shook it off.
Right.
In that press conference and was like, okay, this is what happened. We're done. And,
yeah.
And I don't know. It was so definitive.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the writing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, should I put a spoiler warning?
And you were asking about Ava Gardner, and I kind of spun off into something else. But
yeah,
for me, Ava Gardner, I just loved her performance. I mean, and it's funny because she's one of those classic like Hollywood bombshells. Like she was really known early, at least as far as I know. I've never seen her in anything other than this. Mm-hmm. She's known as, you know, a beautiful kind of sex symbol woman.
Yeah.
And obviously she's very beautiful in this movie, but that just had nothing to do with why I loved her in this movie.
Yeah. And even though, like, even her her arc throughout it is, and integral to her arc is this affair subplot that happens and has happened in her past. Like, it's not like a sexualized thing or anything.
Right.
It's very much just a political maneuver that that is used against or potentially used against the people plotting against the president and everything.
Right. And it's funny because her character is kind of I don't want to say she has a bit of a reputation or a past of being kind of vixen-like, kind of a, I don't know what the term is I'm looking for, but just kind of a woman who has affairs, a powerful woman. Right. Like, she likes to be associated with the power. I don't know what it is, but she has that appeal to her or that characteristic, but it's funny because she's also clearly very intelligent, and she's able to like feel out the progress that's or like where the relationship with Jiggs is leading.
Yeah.
Like the way she figures it out and kind of and gets so offended by it, you know.
Yes.
Like she's totally being used in that scene, and she just her reaction to it is great.
I love the way that plays out, because that is one of the more one of the more like stage play type encounters in the movie.
Yeah.
I love that, because there's this confusion, or there's this misunderstanding to an extent. Like, he is using her,
right,
and everything, but she thinks that he's using her to get
right
dirt on the general, where he's using it to save democracy,
right,
and prevent a coup. And it's like, it's such an interesting, again, balancing act between that, like having these characters that are reacting to a situation, but are reacting to it from completely different viewpoints,
right,
and reacting to completely different situations than what they're actually in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really just intricate kind of plotting, and from a dialogue perspective, it's just very just fulfilling and satisfying. It's just
absolutely
so good.
Yeah. And I love Kirk Douglas in that scene too, mm-hmm. because he's playing the role of the good soldier.
Yeah.
He's doing the hard job, the dirty job that President Lyman even says that. It's like a thankless dirty job. He decimates and ruins his relationship with Ava Gardner's character, which is Eleanor.
Eleanor.
He ruins his relationship with her to protect the president.
Yeah.
And he, like I said, he's playing the role of a dutiful soldier and a good soldier, and it doesn't change the fact that it's really tragic.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because clearly he has feelings for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, I kind of want to go into spoilers. We've touched on spoilers a little bit here, so hopefully it's not too spoilery, but let's go into spoilers for 7 Days in May. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I thought we kind of already spoiled some of it.
We kind of did, so I'm kind of curious.
It was hard to bounce into that.
It was. Oh, you're fine. Yeah. All right, we're going to go into our spoiler review of 7 Days in May, just to see.
Nice.
Okay. So there are some pretty big things that happen. So there is, I think it's Senator Clark is pretty much abducted and held in captivity in that, secret base. Martin Balsam's character is murdered in a plane crash.
Yeah.
And, Burt Lancaster is just an imposing guy. So let's talk about those kind of elements of this movie. Let's start with Martin Balsam and the kind of emotional crux of the movie, where Lyman finds out that he has died in a plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes after he has that meeting with, I can't remember his name, where he's getting the information, or he's trying to get information, and then he threatens the guy, and it's such a cool moment for Martin Balsam. I'm a huge fan of Martin Balsam.
He's really good.
Everything I've seen, he's amazing.
Yeah.
And he does this, and then it cuts away, and then we don't see him again at all until we find out that he died in a plane crash. And it's just so, I love that element of the story, because it's showing the kind of overpowered nature of, like, the stakes of what they're up against are massive.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even though this is kind of a type of these days it would be kind of seen as a narrative kind of cliche to an extent. Here it's just, it's so much more powerful and palpable because these characters, like, it's a conspiracy. They are up against something that they don't understand, like, meaning the president and Kirk Douglas and Martin Balsam. They're up against something that is whispers, and it's something that's not really that, that they don't have the hard facts of it. So when they have, like, one of their team, murdered, in an accident, it's like, it just brings home the gravity of what they're facing and what they're up against and what the country's up against. So I just really appreciate that. How did you feel about it? Did you kind of see that coming, or how did you feel about it?
I didn't really see it coming. But what I think is interesting about the tone of the movie, is I feel like that moment where, Martin Balsam's character is killed is really a turning point, because I feel like early on, the first act or two of the movie, President Lyman, like I said, is not very likable, and I feel like the cards are really stacked against him.
Yeah.
As far as whether or not this disarmament treaty was a good thing, I feel like even at, like, from the standpoint of the audience watching the movie, you don't necessarily think he's wrong, but it's like everybody else in the movie thinks he's wrong.
Yeah.
And like, he hasn't really presented a very good case as to why the disarmament treaty was a good thing. And so in a way, you're not necessarily condoning what General Scott and the Joint Chiefs are doing, but you understand it a little better.
Yeah.
But then I feel like after that murder, when Martin Balsam is killed, I feel like it really shifts. Like, you really, because obviously they've taken it so far that they're willing to kill an innocent person.
Right.
And that's what I love about that. It really ushers in the third act in a beautiful way and really flips the tables.
Yeah.
That was so great because, like you just said, Burt Lancaster is very imposing. I feel like his imposing nature takes over in that third act.
Definitely.
And he just becomes a stalwart, will not back down even when he's defeated kind of person.
Yeah.
And he loses his credibility after that. And I'm just like, okay, like, I'm not in favor of mutiny or coups, despite how much I don't like our current president. But like I said, you empathize to an extent.
Yeah. You can definitely see the perspective that he's coming from.
Right.
Even though it's
a good perspective.
Yeah. And it's really just the strength of the writing, of course, but it's also just, it's what you do best with, like, the best way to showcase a villain is, like, the villain is never the villain of their story.
Right.
Like, they're the hero of their story. And like, what I love is also another way that it's kind of flipped around a little bit is that kind of big climactic scene with Lyman and oh my God, what, Scott, where they're having their confrontation and everything. It's like, that's where the gloves are coming off. Like, Lyman is just point blank telling him, like, hey, you're a megalomaniac. He's also appealing to, like, his sense of duty and upholding the Constitution and everything. Is like, this is going to destroy the country to do this and everything. It's just, it's such an interesting, again, I use this word frequently, but an interesting balancing act. And it's just, it's so satisfying, just everything about it.
Yep. I really loved it.
Yeah.
I also love the kind of final confrontation between Jiggs and General Scott.
Yes.
It's fun because I feel like that set piece, where, I don't know what, it's at the Pentagon, and it's like, there's like that gate that that Jiggs goes through several times in the movie.
Yeah.
And there's like that changing clock, which I nerd out a little bit because I think that's like a time recorder machine. Like,
oh yeah.
Like the company I work for started out in that.
Nice.
And I was like, I wonder if that's a simplex time recorder machine.
That's awesome. Yeah,
it just, they showed it so much in the movie and I feel like it was modern technology for the time. They're like, look how cool the Pentagon is. Look at this clock. With the date and the time. It's cool. but anyway, so that set piece was really cool. And I love how they just basically cross each other's paths inadvertently, and they have this little confrontation, and I just love how Jigs really had the upper hand. I don't even remember what he said.
I remember what he said.
Yeah, what exactly did he say?
I'm looking up the actual quote because it's so just beautiful. Let me try to find it. Hang on.
Because his character, Jigs, is a little... He's criticized for being walking a tightrope and not taking very... not taking extreme opinions on anything or not... Not voicing his opinions on things, right?
And
being kind of a centrist and a sort of indecisive, if you will. But the way he played it ended up working out.
Yeah. Oh, so absolutely.
He really has him in that moment. I can't remember exactly what he says though.
So he says, Scott says something to him, like he basically is insinuating that Jigs is Judas.
Yeah.
And then he says, like, you know Judas, right? And then Jig says, yes, I know who Judas was. He was a man I worked for and admired until he disgraced the 4 stars on his uniform.
Yes.
Just so beautiful.
It's awesome.
And
then Mike drops and walks out.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Great.
He dabs on his way out, too.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, it's just, it's really, just really satisfying. The way that kind of all came together.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to mention, I don't know per se, I don't know any fact to this, but it feels like this story and the movie itself feels like it feels like I would be surprised if Aaron Sorkin didn't take a lot of influence or inspiration from this movie when making The West Wing.
Yeah.
Just it has just such a West Wing feel to it. Even out of the president's name, Lyman.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. Both kind of deal with idealistic presidents.
I definitely thought of The West Wing a few times.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah, to your point of how this is going to be just a stupid jab, but when you said that, everyone else just doesn't like the president in this movie, and it's like, the opening scene is protesters outside the White House and them looking at the newspaper and saying that he has a 29% approval rating, which is insane.
Right.
And then my quick jab was going to be like, and he's not even in the bunker. so
nice.
Yeah. I guess he didn't have to inspect it that day.
Yeah.
But fuck.
Jesus.
Yeah. Let's see. So what else can we talk about in this movie?
I'm sort of thrilled by the idea of military leaders getting into politics.
Oh, okay.
Running for office, because I feel like that's a... Obviously, our first president of the United States was a general of the army.
Mm-hmm.
Until
I've seen Hamilton.
Right. even up into the 20th century, Dwight Eisenhower, was I think our last president who was a general. I know John F. Kennedy was like a captain in the Navy, and like a lot of presidents have had military service, but as far as like a true, like Eisenhower, like he led part of the Western, or he led part of the European front in World War II. Like he was like a 4-star general. And I feel like we've just gotten really far away from that. Like you never really hear about that anymore.
Right.
I think a few years ago there were some whispers about Petraeus maybe getting in the game.
I think, wasn't there talk about Colin Powell?
Yeah, Colin Powell has been mentioned several times back in the day or back in the 90s. Who was Trump's guy that he fired and now is speaking out against him? I can't think of
Bolton?
His name. Not John Bolton. No. John Bolton's a douchebag.
Mary Trump?
gosh, I can't think of his name.
Stormy Daniels. Roger Stone.
It's killing me.
Oh, no, he's buddies with Roger Stone.
I can't think of him.
Wow.
But he was part of the Trump cabinet, and he's a very level-headed guy. People like him a lot, and I love the idea of, because to me, the presidency is about leadership as opposed to political experience or anything really. It's just about being a good leader. Like,
yeah,
George Washington didn't really know anything about politics.
You
know?
Right.
He was just a really good leader. He wasn't even a great military mind. He just knew how to lead people really well.
Right.
And I think that's the most important characteristic for someone to be a president. And it's just an inherent part of being a like, you can't become a four-star, you can't become a general without, you know, great leadership skills.
Right.
And it's something that we just, I think it's something we should look at again as a, as a voting populace, you know. I think it'd be interesting to look at those guys and politically. And, there's a great example of it in this movie.
Totally. Yeah, I was going to make a stupid Kanye West joke.
Oh, God.
But,
yeah, that's funny.
But yeah, well said. Well said.
Yeah.
So does this movie make you want to, should we wrap up first of all?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So does this movie make you want to seek out more of Serling's work outside of the Twilight Zone? Does it make you want to watch more of the Twilight Zone? And listen to my reviews?
It definitely makes me want to watch more. Definitely makes me want to watch more Twilight Zone.
Nice.
Yeah. Because every time I watch something that Rod Serling wrote, I'm like, man, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
Really good writing. And I always end up liking it. I just,
yeah.
I feel like with older stuff, black and white stuff, I just have to be in the mood for it. Like,
for
some reason, it can really take me out of a movie or a show or whatever. I don't know why, but
interesting.
I think that's why I've sort of avoided or not really dove into the Twilight Zone.
Interesting.
But again, I always like it when I watch it, so it's really not a good excuse. But yeah, I definitely need to up my game.
Yes, and I will say you have hours and hours of back podcasts to listen to.
I do.
But no, it's, I highly recommend it, of course. I definitely recommend watching Planet of the Apes as well. What I would, honestly, it would be kind of cool of you to kind of watch like a handful of episodes of the Twilight Zone and then take a break and watch Planet of the Apes and then I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. I have no control over what you do with your media, so I can't dictate how you watch things. But,
yeah.
Yeah. But I will let you borrow Failsafe if you want to.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of General James Mattis.
Oh, okay.
He was Secretary of Defense.
Okay.
Which I think Trump's been through like seven of those so far. So
yeah.
It's hard to remember exactly what his title was, but yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
Right. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So final thoughts on 7 Days in May. Just overall thoughts. I loved it. I'm so happy that I got a chance to see it and review it with you, Tiny. And how do you feel about it overall?
It was awesome. Really great movie, just for all the reasons. Super great acting. I loved the tight writing. And it's just a fun story. Like, you know, movies involving military coups are kind of few and far between, really. It's not like a focal point of a movie usually. It's kind of a B story or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So to see a whole movie dedicated to it was really interesting.
Yeah.
And Rod Serling's a man.
Yep.
Damn
oh, yeah.
Writer.
Oh, yeah. Incredible, incredible talent.
Yeah.
Just genius.
Mm-hmm.
And I will mention that this movie was remade in 1994 with Forest Whitaker. It's called The Enemy Within. I was going to do like a bonus review of it, but I don't think I'm going to. It's available on HBO Go or if you have HBO Now or whatever, HBO Max. Any HBO will do. It is available to stream there, so if you want to check it out, it's up there. It's called The Enemy Within. Interesting kind of tie is that it has Forest Whitaker, who would go on to narrate the 2002 Twilight Zone reboot on UPN, so that's pretty cool.
Nice.
So having said all that, I think that'll do it for this episode of Anthology.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny, do you want me to tell you what I'm going to force you to watch and come on and be a guest on next time?
Okay.
So this is going to be, I mean, this is going to be like in a long time.
Okay.
But it's a movie that is on my Vudu account, but, basically it is a movie written by or co-written by Serling.
Mm-hmm.
It is called The Rack, and this will be after I finish season 3 of the original series.
Okay.
So it'll be a while, but I'm very excited about it because I think you'll dig it. It's got Paul Newman and Edmund O'Brien, who was in 7 Days in May as well. He was Clark.
The senator, yeah.
Senator yeah.
Clark.
But The Rack is from 1956, Paul Newman, a decorated Korean War hero inexplicably collaborates with the enemy while interred in a POW camp and is court-martialed.
Huh.
So yeah, so I'm looking forward to chatting with you about it whenever I finish season 3 of the original Twilight Zone. So look forward to that in like 2.5 or 7 years. And so, yeah, so this was a nice break from my bonus review series on the new season of The Twilight Zone on CBS All Access. Coming up next on the feed, I'm going to continue that and do bonus reviews for the last 5 or the second half of The Twilight Zone season 2. Coming up is 8 and A Human Face and A Small Town and Try and, you might also like. And then after that, I'm going to do a season wrap up of the Twilight Zone 2019 season 2. I'm going to have my friends Dan and Anna from the Between Science and Superstition podcast on to chat about it, kind of an overall thing. So look forward to that. Yeah, and that'll do it for this episode of Anthology. Thank you guys so much for listening. Tiny, thank you so much for joining me for this adventure down a Rod Serling rabbit hole.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and do you want to tell people where they can find you online? I know you're not really on Twitter, but how can they reach you to send their hate mail?
You can send an email to tiny@obsessiveviewer.com, or I'm also active on the Obsessive Viewer Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
If there's ever something you want to post on there, I'll respond to it.
Yeah. If there's ever anything on the Facebook group.
Yeah.
Just real quick, just to kind of wrap up, tell us about those podcasts you do again.
I am on the Obsessive Viewer podcast. We talk about movies and TV shows, and Tower Junkies, which is a Stephen King, all things Stephen King podcast.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you so much, Tiny. And thank you guys for listening. And I'll see you next time. And now, here's a short clip from our Patreon exclusive RSS feed. To hear the full clip and more exclusive Patreon content, go to patreon.com/obsessiveviewer and become a patron at the minimum rate of $1 per month. Thank you and enjoy.
And I didn't think anyone was there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
And so I was literally sitting there, like, looking at this fire panel, and I was like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? What's up, man? Dun, 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 dun. Just kind of played it off. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, fuck, he probably doesn't watch Hamilton.
No. I just picture when he's out of earshot, you probably are like, you'll be back.
John Adams.
John Adams. Good luck.
Good luck.
Anthology is edited and produced by Matt Hurt and presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. For a full archive of our episodes, go to anthologypod.com/archive. You can also like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod and follow the show on Twitter at @OVAnthologyPod. If you enjoy the show, please take a couple minutes to leave us a rating and a quick review on Apple Podcasts. This is the easiest way to support what we do, and all it costs is a little bit of your time. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, you can make a PayPal donation at anthologypod.com/donate or support us on Patreon for recurring donations and access to commentary tracks and B-roll audio recorded exclusively for patrons at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Every donation goes toward paying the fees to keep the podcast running and is greatly appreciated. Official Anthology merch, including shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more, can be found in the Obsessive Viewers TeePublic store. You can find a link to the store in the show notes of this episode and at anthologypod.com/donate. Or you can simply search for Obsessive Viewer at teepublic.com. For information about the Obsessive Viewers annual live event showcasing short horror films from local filmmakers, check out shocktoberinirvington.com. And for an archive of all our events, as well as news about potential future events, head over to obsessiveviewer.com/live. For more podcast content, you can find our flagship movie and TV review and discussion show, The Obsessive Viewer Podcast, at obsessiveviewer.com, and on Twitter at obsessiveviewer. You can also find Tower Junkies, a podcast where Matt and co-host Tiny share their love of all things Stephen King and his magnum opus, The Dark Tower series, over at TowerJunkiesPod.com and at TowerJunkiesPod on Twitter. And finally, check out The Secular Perspective, Tiny's side project podcast, which tackles current events and life's big questions from the perspective of secular hosts Chad and Amanda at thesecularperspective.com. Bumper music for this podcast comes courtesy of As Good As It Gets, which can be found at facebook.com/asgoodasitgetsband. You can also find As Good As It Gets music on Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Kitty!
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.